We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
One more time, because Kyle's hanging out with me for a few minutes. Man, we welcome you in here to the Wednesday, July 16th edition of D'Lo and KC. I'm Damian Barling.
The ultimate needle mover in God mode himself.
Kenny Caraway is out today.
Yes, sir.
And we are live.
The worst slums of Sacramento.
Alongside,
what are you doing with him?
Oh, Kyle Madsen's here. We've been talking about extending that handoff at the end of the Insider show over the last couple of days. And what happened a few minutes ago was a prime example of why we need to do that. I had mentioned I'm excited to talk about, this is not how I intended to start the show whatsoever.
Sorry.
I actually would be curious to know, I don't have a strong opinion. I think I caught... I think I caught the tail end of your discussion.
Yeah.
I'm not, I felt like people loved or were outraged by what happened last night at the end of the Major League Baseball All-Star game.
I loved it.
I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was the perfect way to end a game that absolutely doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was fun. And like, and then I just start looking at it, which is something I rarely do. I was like, this is different. Like, it hasn't happened before. Mm-hmm. What's social media saying? Oh, baseball purists lost their damn mind last night.
And, dude, I couldn't believe it. What a fun thing that I think you are the perfect gauge for something for baseball.
I'm a big baseball guy. I don't know if you heard.
Big baseball guy now. Yep. Salute to your Mariners.
My Mariners. My my guy won the home run derby.
Cal Raleigh.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I know you're really fired up about that.
Very.
But no, you're a sports fan, and you're not anti-baseball, but baseball's down the list for you in terms of what you're tapping into during the summer.
Yeah.
And the fact that you went, that was awesome, is exactly why baseball does it.
Yeah.
Because they want to capture the attention of somebody who, hey, you know what? Maybe they've got it on in the background. Maybe they're not tapped in, but they see on social media that there's a home run derby to end the All-Star game. Like, oh my God, yeah, I got to go watch. It's an easy viral moment. Like there are so many things that baseball did right with that. And it's the freaking All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
The hand-wringing and the pearl-clutching about the sanctity of the Major League Baseball All-Star game. Miss me with it, man.
So,
I'm sorry.
So
I thought it was awesome.
It was terrific. I always thought baseball was a game that was really slow to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
The evolution of professional baseball has been brutally slow. Until recently.
Mm-hmm.
I, again, big baseball guy, T-Mobile Park. The one of the things that stood out to me when we left was, damn, that was quick.
Mm-hmm.
And like when I looked at the, I was like, oh, we were here like in, out in like 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost went by too quick. It was like,
yeah, some games
we
do
were,
it for sure.
We were like really, you know, we was hanging out, amazing seats, amazing, like everything. Mm-hmm. It was literally a perfect day at the park.
Yeah.
God, that went by really, really quick. But I've been all about the pitch clock and some of these changes and the game. Again, up until recently, it's been slow to evolve. The only evolution process that is slower is the baseball fans.
Mm-hmm.
Process of evolving.
Yeah.
And they are so, you know, against the extra inning start a man on. They want a game to go 36 innings because it's deemed a classic.
Sure.
They want someone to run over someone in the All-Star game. It's the same people who bitch and complain about the NBA All-Star game every year. And it's just not something I understand. It's like, you have got to grow this sport. This sport can no longer be catered to you. The WNBA was terribly slow to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
My frustration being around that league for so many years is they constantly catered to the fans that they had.
Yes.
And would not work to acquire new fans.
Yep.
And we would have conversations with the people in Connecticut about the volume of music at the Mohegan Sun Arena. And it'd be like, nah, it's you know, our audience gets really upset. Now, granted, the Connecticut Sun audience is a little bit older. That's a casino. The demographic is a little bit different than perhaps some of the other teams out there. But it's like, yo, there's no real hype to them. And they come out and they're like, hey, can you turn the volume up? Oh, no. We can't.
Yeah, the fans.
It'll really upset Carol in the front row. Like, she'll get really upset. And Carol's a real person, by the way. Lovely woman. I loved her. I very highly doubt she's still with us. Because, like, she was really old 10 years ago. But God bless her. Like, she was we don't want to disturb them. And it's like, oh, all
disturb
right.
Them.
So
they're
we're not.
Basketball
like, okay. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
And I feel like that was baseball for so many years. And they're finally like, F it. Let's start to make changes. We're not going to make grand sweeping changes and change everything all at once, but we're going to make a change here and you're going to get used to it. Then we're going to make a change here and you're going to get used to it. And then we're just going to slowly start to evolve this game a little bit.
It's already unrecognizable if you're looking for pure baseball.
Sure.
Like that ship sailed, man.
Yeah.
It's gone. They didn't decide the World Series. If they ended Game 7 of the World Series with a home run derby, I'd be a little like, ah.
Like, oh, sure. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, man,
yeah.
That feels kind of weird.
Yeah.
I don't like that. This feels... It's the All-Star game.
The game does not
what
matter.
They've ended it in a tie. They tried making it home field advantage for the World Series. Everybody thought that was stupid.
Who will ever forget? The tie was so bad because it wasn't like the plan.
Yes.
It wasn't like, hey, guys, you know, if we're tied after nine, we're just calling it. Like, we don't need to do this. We got pitchers. We can't do this. They didn't know what to do. Like, what was it? Selig is out there and he's looking around and they're like, it's over.
A mess.
And everyone's like,
that was a mess, dude.
What?
And so they just ensured by putting in this home run derby thing that it wouldn't happen again. Again, they did this 3 years ago. This isn't something they decided to do last night. So they put this in to make sure that, hey, we don't want to end in a tie again. We don't want the All-Star game going 15 innings and then settling it with a home run derby where everybody's bored because no runs have been scored. Like, that's the thing is people will go, I miss 18-inning games. No, you don't.
No, like...
You miss seeing the 18 in the box score. Let me tell you, I sat through the A's and Angels played like a 16-inning game one night when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
It was so boring. You sit there and you go, wow, okay, three up, three down, on to the 13th. Like, I'm sorry. I get the people who are like, I miss it at baseball peers, but do you miss the pitcher hitting?
No,
you don't.
There's a moment, like, and it's normally around the 12th or 13th inning where it's like, this is really exciting. Mm-hmm. Then you get to like the 15th and it's like, Jesus.
It's like, yes.
And you don't want to leave because you don't want to miss the end. Where 18, 19 inning games are really exciting is when you're looking at ESPN.com and you see that the game is still going on at the 17th, and then you flip over to it, and you catch the last two innings, and you've invested 15 minutes into this 19-inning game,
and
you can say you saw it.
That's it. That's so I get why they didn't want to be like, hey, okay, we'll do one extra inning, but then home run. Like, no, because at any point, the baseball purist is going to be mad that they did the home run derby thing.
Right.
But, yo, man, if the NBA... did anything half this creative with their All-Star game to make it this interesting, it would be all we talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant move to make the All-Star game more interesting for people. What sucks and what the league needs to fix, what MLB needs to fix, is make sure that Shohei Ohtani is not in a different zip code by the time you get to that home run derby.
Yeah.
Make sure Aaron Judge... Can you imagine Aaron Judge v. Shohei Ohtani for the All-Star game?
Oh, man.
That and that is where, because I saw some people last night, like, you know, this is Bonte Hill specifically said, guys need to have some pride.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know what? I don't totally disagree with that. Like, hang out for the rest of the game. And in the event that, hey, you know what? Hey, it looks like we might go to extras. Let's go get warm. You have Aaron Judge versus Shohei Ohtani. They got three swings each for the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that you're not locking into that and that's not an all-time baseball moment?
Oh, for sure.
Kyle Schwarber, look, whether you liked the home run derby
Caitlin
or not.
Caitlin Clark versus Sabrina Ionescu for the.
Come on.
Yeah.
Like, yes, yeah. I'm so there.
Three-point contest, top of the key.
So here for that. You got five shots. Go. Mm-hmm. Oh, both made five. All right. Shot for shot. Go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, yes, give me that. And whether you liked it or not last night, Kyle Schwarber hitting three home runs in the home run, the extra innings home run derby in the All-Star game to win it, ostensibly, mm-hmm. is going to be an all-time baseball moment,
mm-hmm.
whether you liked it or not.
Mm-hmm.
They created that out of thin air last night.
Yeah.
In a way that wouldn't have if, oh, it was a spectacular baseball game and they ended it this way. Like, yeah, man, they ended it in a fun way. What would have sucked is, hey, five more innings of nothing and then like, oh, the NL pushed a run across on a sack fly.
Yeah, because...
That's anticlimactic.
Yeah, and sorry to the guys who just happened to be in the game in the ninth inning. You had to play the next five innings because we didn't have any players left.
Exactly.
Like, we're starting to pull spectators out of the
exactly.
out of the crowd because we just have nothing left.
That's it. So, make
wait,
sure...
here comes Cal Raleigh to relief pitch. Great. Oof.
And then they would have been an up.
But he's also
position.
The catcher, so it creates a whole weird thing that happens.
Grab a glove, ump.
Yeah.
So yeah, man. Well, I thought it was an awesome All-Star. That was the most fun I've had watching an All-Star game in
great.
Any league.
I thought it was great.
I can't remember when.
I thought it was great, and I thought the outrage was both funny and predictable.
Yeah, totally.
Like, you guys
totally.
have to move on.
Understand
the game is changing.
Yes.
You have to move on.
Yes. And understand that there are fans coming in because of moments like that.
Sure. And that's so desperately what you need. Now, once Major League Baseball gets over the hangup of media companies cutting their highlights and airing them on social media, they'll be in an even better spot.
Yes.
Instead, you have to bootleg the highlights and get it on social
Crazy,
media.
Crazy, dude.
But once they find their house of highlights, man, that is so, so good for your game.
Yep.
So good for your game. But baby steps. They're doing a great job. This is not why I asked you to stay. We'll just keep rolling because I don't want to throw Kyle's schedule off too much. Your partner at Candlestick Chronicles, Chris Biederman, is going to join me in about 30 minutes.
Okay.
I said to you right at the end of your show, mm-hmm. The Insiders, great show, 10 to 12. I'm a Bradley Beal fan,
mm-hmm.
and I love the move to Los Angeles.
Yep.
The buyout with the Phoenix Suns is complete. He gave back $13.9 million of the $110 million that he was owed. He signed a 2-year, $11 million deal with the Clippers. That second year is a player option.
Mm-hmm.
So if he has a nice year this year, if the Clippers do well this year, either way, Brad could be in for a
yep.
really, really solid payday
yep.
After this upcoming season. I thought this was a great addition to the Clippers. I always have a little reservation when you add a potential scorer next to James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there's one more move that the Clippers could make to really tie this together, and we'll get to that in a second. And you immediately, I fell for James himself. I thought you were in on this. I thought you were about this move by the Clippers, and it turns out it's the exact opposite.
So I like this move for the Clippers. This is where what I feel about the Clippers is not rational. The John Collins addition, love it. Brooke Lopez, love it. Brad Beal, love it. Brad Beal's issue was the contract. Brad Beal is not bad at basketball anymore. Brad Beal's contract
was
prohibitive.
Not even remotely bad at basketball.
Brad Beal, good player. So I love it all. I'm not disagreeing with you. I decided while watching Game 7 this year, against the Denver Nuggets and watching starters get pulled in the middle of the beginning of the fourth quarter because they were punting on the game, that I'll never believe in the Clippers again. I bought into them the last 2 years. I bought into them before, Lob City. I was like, yeah, that's a good team. I'm out. I'm out on the Clippers. I said this on my show. The Clippers could go 82-0 and be 15-0 in the playoffs, 97-0 going into Game 4 of the NBA Finals and be like, got to see it. You drop four in a row. I'm out. I'm so done believing in the Clippers. Yep, they've made a bunch of moves. They've added a lot of talent. The Clippers are better today than they were at the end of last year.
When you say believing in the Clippers, you mean believing in them to win the championship?
Yeah, believing in them to do anything substantial. Maybe they win around in the playoffs, cool.
Okay.
They're not going to the conference finals.
Huh. I don't know that I'm penciling the Clippers in for anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just like the move and I'm willing to like, hey, let's see what this looks like. When I look at the West, I mean, it's still Oklahoma City. That's not changing. I think the assessment that Durant really elevates the Houston Rockets is perfectly fair.
Yep.
I don't think the Rockets would have been a 2 seed, a 50-plus win 2 seed, again this year, running that same team back without Kevin Durant. I think now, though, this Kevin is exactly what they needed. KD is exactly what they needed. Yep. And it will go a long way for them to getting them back into that conversation. I don't know if they'll be in the conversation for one, but they could be solidly there at two. And I wouldn't be shocked. I love what Denver did. And I don't know about the 82-game part of the season, but when we get to the playoffs, I'll probably have my eyes wide open when it comes to Denver. But I could see the Clippers sitting in the 3 spot right now. Which, for context, the Lakers were at the 3 spot last year, and that didn't ultimately get them anywhere when they got to the playoffs. But I think that this Clippers team is better constructed than the Lakers team was last year.
You could tell me the Clippers were a 65-win 1 seed. I'd be like, all right. I am so far beyond, buying that I'm going to get good Kawhi Leonard for a full postseason. I'm so beyond believing that James Harden's ever going to do anything in May.
Oh yeah, no, and nor should
cool. Like yeah, I've just been suckered into the Clippers thing way too many times, and I'm not falling for it again. You're not getting me. Okay, yeah, good team, nice little regular season, but you're irrelevant come playoff time to me.
Understood. I guess.
What
I like the move. I like Brad a lot.
Yeah, no, they are a better team today.
I don't trust James Harden, and I never will, especially in the playoffs. Sometimes I have trouble. You know what I think they could do, though? And I think it would matter to wins and losses as much as I think it would be the right way to do this. Sign Chris Paul. If this is really Chris Paul's last year, and I don't have any reason not to believe he's 40 years old, sign Chris Paul. Let that veteran floor general for that group. I think it works. I think he works incredible with young talent. But I think he still has a voice amongst his peers.
Sure.
And again, I'm not saying this elevates them to anything. I'm saying you could tie a lot of things together if you throw Chris Paul in there and you know, you take away some point guard responsibilities from James Harden at different times during the game and allow Chris Paul to facilitate with a guy like Bradley Beal, Kawhi Leonard, and all that. Plus, I think it's a great story for Chris Paul.
Yeah, I hate that idea. Yeah, finish out his career with the Clippers.
Again, it's not that's the move right there. It's like, yeah, no. It's a nice little part of the story right there. Go back, finish things out with what should be a really good Clippers team.
Mm-hmm.
You're in Los Angeles. You're with your family. You're happy.
That'd be cool.
And if you decide, and he said it during... I might have been Fanatics. It might have been like a podcast or something at Fanatics. I can't really remember where he said it. And maybe he didn't give it a lot of thought, but like once he really thinks this through, if he decides this is in fact his last year, I think he said he wanted to play at least one more season. I don't know that he said he wanted to play only one more season. Those are certainly two different things. But if he decides, yeah, this is it, I think that's the perfect wrap-up spot for him. And I think he could be valuable for the squad.
Yeah. I don't hate that. Anything to get the ball out of James Harden's hands in big moments is a thumbs up from me.
Yeah. Every Rockets fan agrees with you.
Come on. Every Clippers fan should agree with me.
You don't
get to be the system and then in game 7 go, "Yeah, my guys just didn't make shots." Like what? That's crazy, man. Yeah.
Can't do that.
Nah.
Can't do that. That's a tough look. Did you see the Pelicans? They committed themselves to Zion Williamson this year. Zion has one of the most interesting contracts I've ever seen in the NBA.
Really?
The percentage in which like because he wasn't. So they could have. They had the ability to cut him before it yesterday. It had to be prior to the end of yesterday.
Oh, it's like an NFL contract. Your guarantee doesn't kick in until July 14th.
Well, so if they had cut him, only a percentage of his contract for this year would have been guaranteed. The remaining 3 years would have been wiped out completely with absolutely no consequences for the Pelicans. So I think you're looking at his contract. Am
yes.
I right? So Zion's contract will become fully guaranteed in 2026, 2027 if he remains on the roster beyond July 15, 2026. The exact thing we just went through. The same applies to the year after.
It is fully non-guaranteed.
Yes, correct. There, so 20% of Zion's salary for each season becomes guaranteed if he passes all six of his weigh-in checkpoints during the prior season. Another 40% if he plays in at least 41 games in the previous season. An additional 20% if he plays in at least 51 games. And the final 20% becomes guaranteed if he plays in at least 61 games. Zion, who, believe it or not, is still only 25 years old, played in 30 games last year.
Oh.
They could have. Now this gives you
an NFL ass contract.
This gives you a little window into Joe Dumars right here.
Mm-hmm.
They could have washed their hands of this whole thing, and chose not to. And that is the constant like fear with Zion, is he was 24-7-5 last year,
man.
And the fear of getting the right trainer, the right staff, the right program, the right regiment, the right whatever, and him playing 70 games in a season, not in your uniform, has to be terrifying.
Especially when this isn't random role player.
Right.
It's like if Zion gets it right, if some team gets it right with Zion, you're like first or second team All-NBA perennially every year. He's that good.
Yep.
So yep. It's not, this isn't, he might be good. He might, like, everybody knows when Zion plays, he's also, and I go back to that, the play-in game a couple of years ago against the Lakers at 23-24. Is that right?
Yeah.
And he was dominating that game.
Yeah.
He was dragging them along in that game and then he gets hurt.
Yep.
But it's that, yeah. I can imagine if you were in the building or if you're around the Pelicans, you see that and you go, hey.
Yeah.
If we can get that guy. Yeah. Like, it's so enticing.
Right.
It's brutal. Difficult spot.
This is, I've never seen an NBA contract like this.
It's really weird.
Never seen an NBA contract like this. And I saw the Athletic article that the Pelicans will fully guarantee Zion salary. I was like, why is that a thing? And I knew that there were parameters. I knew that there were weigh-in parameters and game parameters and all of that stuff, but I didn't realize it had such a drastic effect on what he could earn that year. And I didn't realize that they could go the full NFL route, pay part of his salary this year, and just be off the books the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Why would he agree to that?
He might not have had many options.
Huh.
Because they signed this extension. I mean, he's hurt year after year after year after year.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Like, go into restricted free agency, play out that last year and see what happens when you become an unrestricted free agent? And now it's not your team that you're on that can manipulate money by going over the cap and tiptoeing around aprons and doing all that stuff. It's another team that would need, in your mind, what you want, that same dollar figure completely free on their books.
Man.
It's, I don't want to say it's impossible. It's certainly not. It is extremely difficult, though.
Yeah.
And I'm sure his agent did their due diligence and checked the landscape and was like, hey, You better watch how much you eat out. We better find a way to keep you healthy. And then I'm sure they felt like, hey, maybe we weren't as healthy as we were hoping last year, but you killed it during the time that you were out there. I have to assume he hit most of, if not all of, his weigh-in points.
Yeah.
Or Joe Dumars is crazy.
Well, which is more likely?
Well, after draft day, that's certainly left people wondering.
The stories that have come out about that, where the Hawks are like, crazy. You're sure.
Like,
okay, we're going to call Joe directly. We're just going
to. That's the best part. They didn't believe the guy that they were talking to. And someone was like, I'm just going to call Joe. Hey, Joe, this jackass over here is trying to give away your first round pick next year.
Yeah, bet. Well,
oh. Unprotected. Oh, yeah. No. We're in. Yeah, go ahead.
They're like, unprotected 2026. Zion, in that game, by the way, that play-in game, he played 36 and a half minutes, 40 points, 11 boards, 5 assists, a steal, a block. He was 17 of 27 from the field.
Man.
It's like, you're betting on him. Against the Laker team that went to the conference finals.
Tremendous.
Whew.
I appreciate you hanging out a few extra minutes to talk NBA stuff, talk a little bit about the All-Star game. Actually going to talk to your partner over on the Candlestick Chronicles, Chris Biederman, coming up in about 20 minutes. We've got much more ahead. We're thrilled that you're here with us. It's D'Lo and Casey, brought to you by Sky River Casino on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall! Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
20. All right, we got Kings basketball jumping off here in just a few minutes, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to keep my eye on it here. Is we'll keep you updated on everything that's going on. Game about to start here in a little bit.
This is like the Team USA game part two right here.
Yeah, but not really because...
No, it was a bit sarcasm right there.
Yeah, I don't imagine I'm going to have the emotional...
Is Maxie right now? Oh, my gosh.
Hey, I'm just happy Max is playing. But I brought my... I haven't been bringing my iPad in lately, so like if I can get... Oh, I did. Okay, perfect.
The iPad's a game changer.
Oh, yeah, it's a good look. But I can have it like right in front of me. Versus keeping to half, you know, having to keep it, look up at the screen to see what they're doing. So I could just keep it right in front of me. Got the box score right here. You don't have to flip over if you're at home and you're watching, you know, from the house or whatever. You just two screen this joint. You don't want to listen to these commentators anyway. With all due respect to these two guys right here, it's not Mark Jones. You ain't family. We don't need to hear from you. So we'll keep you updated on everything that's going on when the Sacramento Kings take on the Cleveland Cavaliers coming up here in the next handful of minutes. For those that missed that availability tweet, Maxine Raynaud is in fact available for the Sacramento Kings. He will in fact be playing for the Sacramento Kings today. So that'll be an exciting component. And to the best of mind, everybody going.
As they should.
Devin Carter's going. Are you of the belief they need to...
Yeah, no one's proving anything
through, go
here.
Win a title or whatever.
Devin Carter, we're trying to figure out if he could play backup point guard, go and take the whole summer league. Maxime, you're the hype man of the year, but second round pick as well. Need all the work you can get. And Nick looks great, but I don't know. I figure more playing time helps everyone.
Can I hit you with some feelings on that? I don't think with Nick and Max, like I think everything they do is like, all right, that's cool. Like, good. I don't think it matters what Devin Carter does this. Like, and I'm not trying to change my tone here. Like I said, I wanted to see him play well. I wanted him to be effective. I didn't think he had to be, you know, 30 points every night, but I wanted to see him be something like he was, you know, a couple of days ago, 17 points, 8 rebounds, whatever that was, and comfortable with the ball in his hands. And he did it, and salute. He's running the point right now. I don't think it matters.
Like, what do you mean
really
it doesn't
don't.
Matter in the sense like he's probably just not going to get much playing time? Or
I don't know how you work him into the lineup.
I get that, but also I think if you're going to try and work him into this role, and I guess have him ready, he should play, I think, all the summer league. Just like I think he just needs the reps. But like I don't even disagree with you. Like I don't see how you really get him onto the court.
first play of the game, though, is a Max alley-oop. Man, like it's going to be so difficult to temper the excitement of Maxime Renault the way that he has played. And like you know, the fact that he's playing this way, he's not a guard. He's not, you know, he's not at that in that clogged backcourt. Like, he's at a position that the Sacramento Kings could absolutely utilize him as.
Shout out Drew Eubanks, because if he gets minutes before Max on game one and he commits a turnover, it is over with. It is
buddy,
over with.
You might be the quickest.
Any little mistake, it's over with.
You might be the quickest king in history to get booed.
Drew Eubanks is the equivalent of a stopgap quarterback in the NFL with the rookie waiting behind that everyone wants
to see
play.
Yeah, that's it. And that's where Max's summer league might be really valuable. Of course, what Doug Christie and that coaching staff sees during training camp and so on, that's going to be equally important as to like what his starting position is. But, you know, when Kyle talks about, you know, Kyle was talking at the end of the Insiders about, you know, is this kind of the peak fun that the Sacramento Kings and almost certainly their fans are going to have, you know, watching these young guys, watching Neek, watching Max play. I don't believe that that's the case. I don't believe this is the peak of Sacramento Kings basketball. I don't think this is the peak of excitement or happiness. But there is a caveat to that, because there's DeMar, you know, there's Zach LaVine, you know, there are those guys that you know, they don't, DeMontis Sabonis, they need to get out there, they need to get run. Drew Eubanks doesn't, with all due respect. Drew Eubanks doesn't need run. Dario Saric doesn't need run. And those guys getting more playing time, or any playing time perhaps, ahead of Maxime Renault might be that moment where it's like, yeah, I'm not really enjoying this. This isn't what I want. There's no player on this summer league roster, there's no young player, and that includes Neek Crawford, that's better than DeMar or Zach or Domas.
I hear what you're saying. Like moving to Neek Clifford real quick, is there any chance that he kind of moves his way above Devin too?
Yeah. Absolutely, because Neek is at the, you could put Neek is at the three.
Yeah,
I don't think you can put Devin at the three.
When we, like, I think we've seen from Neek too, he's got all this versatility where it's like, I don't know.
Neek in the tough thing, and again trying to be sympathetic, the tough thing for Devin is the way his career started on injured reserve, being forced into a position where he's got to come back, he's got to be effective, and now he's playing for a coach that wasn't the coach when he was drafted. And that probably factors into the way that Devin looked through some of the early stretch of his career. He looked a lot better when he got back from his first stint at the G League. But Neek, right now, today, again, this isn't the truest form of NBA basketball, but Neek looks really comfortable. And I think part of playing with veterans, the likes of DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, DeMontis Sabonis, you know, even Keegan Murray headed into his fourth year, Malik Monk, you know, those types of guys, you've got to be comfortable. You've got to just find a way. Like, even if you're not great the second you step on the floor, you got to find a way to kind of seamlessly fit in. And I think Neek will have a significantly easier go of that than Devin Carter did. And if you can seamlessly fit in, you know, Doug, a coach, we'll always find minutes for you. And this first quarter, this is another one of those Maxime Renault first quarters. He just missed a three. But, like, this is another one of those, we're seeing him do everything on the floor, and I'm all for it. I can someone check the – let me see if I pull the box. Does Max have all 7 points? Let me see if I look real quick. It's 9-7. It's 11-7 right now. Max has 4. I'm sorry. But he's a fun player to watch, and he fits on the Sacramento Kings right now today. He's going to bring Jesse, you're right. The Drew Eubanks thing, the Dario Saric, that's going to be tough. Doug, if Doug goes to the bench and Drew Eubanks gets up, and the crowd starts to boo, Doug might have to be like, no, my bad, man. Not you.
Yeah, he's in a tough spot. He's in a real tough spot.
Like, I don't know with you know, again, with all due respect to those guys, I don't know how much they can offer this version of the Sacramento Kings, especially when you have scores, and if that's ultimately what we're talking about, because I don't think, you know, Dario Saric isn't like Jonas Valanciunas, where you could count on him to be, you know, tough and really physical on the defensive end. I don't think Drew Eubanks is that either. Like, both of them are perfectly fine basketball players, but are either one of them that? No, probably not. Those might be the things that Maxime Raynaud is missing. That's not enough to not have Maxime Raynaud out on the floor. And that's why we go back to these, you know, the so-called big three here for the Sacramento Kings in the summer league. Max, Neek, and Devin. Devin is the one that I'm just really struggling with to, like, where am I going to put him? Max is looking to score every time he touches the ball. Every single time he touches the ball, he's looking to score. He just drew a foul in the post right there. We've seen him take threes already. He's headed to the foul line now. But Max is looking to be really aggressive on the offensive end here in game number 4 of Summer League. The Sacramento Kings, of course, 3-0 so far. Three-time Summer League champions has never happened. Some Kings fans are like, hey, man, go for it. Go win it. Why not? And I'm of the belief, yeah, why not? And I'm really interested. I mean, here we are on what day is it? It's Wednesday, and you've got these guys running. Like, there's no indication that the Kings won't put forth their best effort to win as many of these Summer League games as they can, and perhaps bring home a Summer League championship. I wouldn't be shocked if Neek or Max went the full Summer League. I think I would be a little surprised if Devin wound up going the entire Summer League. But he is in fact a second year player. But we looked it up. What did he play? 36 games last year? That's in the NBA. That's not including the stuff he did in the G League. I think he got cleared to play. It was shortly after Mike got fired, so it was either late December or early January.
Yeah, he played 36 games, 11 minutes on average per game.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if that's something you constitute where it's like, yeah, like he needs the run. But the thing for Devin is Devin probably needs run against NBA guys, not guys fighting to be in the NBA. But he's playing today, as is Maxime Raynaud, as is Neek Clifford. So we're going to keep our eye on this game for the next couple of hours. The Sacramento Kings down 11-9 right now against the Cleveland Cavaliers. You don't have to go anywhere. We're going to keep you updated. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk Kings basketball. We're going to talk a little 49ers football as well with my man Chris Biederman from the Sacramento Bee and the Candlestick Chronicles podcast. He joins us next here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall! Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
I said, hang on, Chris, we're coming back. We actually are back. We welcome in our man, Chris Biederman of the Sacramento Bee, talking to Chris about covering baseball a little bit here for the first time in Sacramento. And obviously it hasn't been perfect, but I'm sure it's added a nice little dynamic to your job over there at the Sacramento Bee.
Yeah, it's been fun. Like I was saying, like, it's just cool to have Major League Baseball in town. And, you know, whenever you'd – I mean, being in Sacramento, you're looking at, what, 2-hour drive each way, hour and a half drive, depending on traffic, to catch a major league game. And now it's, you know, 10, 15 minutes down the street for me. So it's definitely fun. You know, I think it's been, whether or not you want to call it successful, is probably a mixed bag. I think the fact that, you know, the most high profile series, you find way more visiting team fans and A's fans, is sort of emblematic of how people feel about the A's overall, but in terms of the baseball experience, like fans who haven't invested a ton of money seem happier with it than the fans who have, mm-hmm. from like a ticket resale perspective. But you know, I think we probably could have seen that coming. But no, for me, I mean, selfishly, it's cool to have baseball in town. It's tough to beat having to work a baseball game in the summer when it's, you know, nice and warm out, maybe a light jacket. But other than that, like, it's been a beautiful summer, so no complaints here.
Yeah, and it's tough for me to feel bad for anyone who did invest money into this. Like, if you invested a lot of money into the A's, my brother, that's your fault. And, like, I get maybe you got excited, and like I promise you, I understand, but man, the blame sits squarely on your own shoulders. You took that risk.
Yeah, and I will say, though, in defense of those people, like, there are some very interesting young players that the A's have.
Sure.
The problem is outside of Mason Miller, none of them pitch. So they got a potentially elite closer, but, you know, the pitching staff is kind of a mess. It's not going to be a great place to pitch as the summer goes on and gets warmer. So, you know, we'll see how that shakes out. But, it's definitely an interesting wrinkle to have in Sacramento for sure.
It's 16-16 right now in Las Vegas, the Sacramento Kings and the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're going to talk summer league basketball and why Chris hates it in just a second. But I want to talk about the Juwan Jennings situation, because we're, 6 days away from everyone reporting at San Francisco 49ers training camp. The Brock Purdy deal got done, and it was like, hey, man, we did it. We got through the off season with nothing silly happening, and then a couple of days ago, Juwan Jennings is like, hey, man, pay me or trade me, one or the other. I'm entering the final year of my deal, and I have some thoughts on this, but you're the expert. You cover this team very, very closely. How big of a deal is this Juwan Jennings situation with the San Francisco 49ers?
I think it's a pretty big deal from a few different perspectives. I think objectively you can look at it and say, yeah, Jennings is worth probably double what he's getting paid. And mm-hmm. Particularly given the state of the 49ers receiving core right now, Brandon Ayuk coming off an injury, you don't fully know what you have from Ricky Pearsall, who dealt with an injury during the offseason program. And, you know, it's Juwan Jennings was basically your most productive receiver last year on a team that has, you know, designs to make a run to the playoffs again. So you look at contracts around the league, I think anywhere from that $13 to $15 million a year range absolutely makes sense based on the production that Juwan Jennings has had throughout his career. But he's making $7.5 million this year. And so you look at it like his agent's Drew Rosenhaus. He's done a lot of contracts with the 49ers front office in the past. There have been good times with Drew Rosenhaus. There have been some shaky times. You remember like Navarro Bowman and Anthony Davis mm-hmm. going way back. Those were Drew Rosenhaus clients. So it's not, you know, Rosenhaus, obviously one of the most respected agents in the game. It was not totally a surprise to see the Monday, you know, 8 days before training camp starts, that Adam Schefter has this report. It seemed pretty strategic.
Pretty agent influenced. If you read the entire article, it was like, oh, Jesus Christ, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think this is why the 49ers have been so hardline with their contracts in the past, because they don't want to set this precedent like anybody who wants a new deal or who wants to push us around can. And that's why some of these, you know, Nick Bosa, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle to a certain extent, Fred Warner, like that's why some of these deals have been hard for the 49ers, excuse me, to agree to, because they don't want to set the precedent of like, hey, if you don't like your deal, you'll just hold out and want a new one. But they ended up caving to the players, because that's kind of what you have to do in the long run. And you find yourself in a situation where a guy with a year left on his deal wants a new contract. And I think something can get done here. Like, the 49ers have a lot of cap space. They obviously need Juwan Jennings. And I think it makes sense for them to get, I don't know, a 2 or 3 year deal done in the range of $13 to $15 million a year.
Yeah, you know, one of the funny things about Casey not being here is sometimes when I present something, like I talk so much about Juwan Jennings that day, I at first it was kind of like, Juwan, man, whatever, bro, like, trade him. I even told Kyle at like 11:45, like, who can, like, whatever, man, just trade him. Like, is that really what we're doing at this point? But by the time I got to a full-on discussion with myself, about it 2 hours later, I completely changed my own mind. I was like, okay, wait a second. Let's talk through this for a minute. Debo entered the year as the 49ers' number one wide receiver. He got paid. Brandon Ayuk entered the year as the 49ers' number one wide receiver. He got paid. Debo's gone. Ayuk is hurt. Jawan Jennings is entering this season as the 49ers' number one wide receiver, and I'm sure he's looking around that wide receiver's room. He's looking at that depth chart, and he's like, hey, pay me.
Yeah.
And it's not unusual for a football player to ask for some sort of extension or raise or whatever the final year of their deal. That's not unusual at all.
Yeah, and I understand the idea, you don't want to pay this guy, just trade him, or you don't want to deal with a headache, trade him. If you trade him, more likely than not, you're doing it for a future draft pick. Mm-hmm. And that draft pick is not helping you at all in 2025. Unless you can swing, you'd have to get real creative. And maybe there's a player that out there that's available via trade at another position. And you could do a player for player swap, like, the Dolphins and the Steelers just did with Jalen Ramsey and the former safety from Alabama, Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a deal like that out there for Jennings, but I think that's hard to do at this point in the offseason. So to me, if you were to really seriously consider seriously entertain trading Jawan Jennings, you'd probably do it before the draft. Mm-hmm. Because at least then, okay, we got a third or fourth round pick or whatever, and that rookie can come in and at least help us in 2025. If you trade Jennings now, I would say it's 70-80% chance it's for a future draft pick, and then you're looking at it like, man, what do you say to George Kittle, Nick Bosa, and Fred Warner, these guys who are busting their tail all offseason to get ready to compete for a playoff spot, and you're just trading a key player on offense for a draft pick that's not going to help the team in 2025? It's a tough place to be, which is why I think they just have to pay him.
Also, you just paid your quarterback a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I love George Kittle, but I think part of the reason that they paid him was he's probably a great little, to use the old Tony Romo, Jason Witten term, he's probably a really good security blanket. I think a lot of tight ends are that to their quarterbacks. We see it with Travis Kelce, and obviously Travis Kelce just immensely talented, but like he's a good little, third and one, second and short. They're gonna find their tight end. And keeping George Kittle, signing George Kittle to a new deal, I think had as much to do with Brock Purdy as it did George Kittle. And I don't think you want to head into this very critical season for the San Francisco 49ers by subtracting one of Brock's weapons.
Yeah, and this probably goes to a larger discussion about Purdy, but like, to me, there's a certain level that Purdy hasn't reached yet, which is like, is he the rising tide that lifts all boats, or is he a product of the situation around him? And that's not a knock on him. I think he's played really, really well, and he obviously deserved to get paid, but we don't know if Brock Purdy can pass that threshold to where he can be the reason why the offense is successful, maybe more than the situation around him. And I know that's a constant like push and pull when it comes to discussion around quarterbacks, but like the Niners have been the most successful when they have an array of weapons. Like when Kyle Shanahan can dial things up and you can have multiple guys, Christian McCaffrey, Brandon Ayuk, going back to Emmanuel Sanders, Debo, like the Niners have always had three or four really good offensive weapons when they've been contending, and we haven't seen them really be the team that can get by with like, George Kittle and a bunch of also ran receivers. Like we haven't seen the 49ers get to where they want to go in that situation. And also you're banking on George Kittle's health. You're banking on Christian McCaffrey's health. Like not having Jawan Jennings could be pretty detrimental considering the question marks you have on the offense. I'm in the camp that like there's probably a sweet spot in that $13 to $15 million a year range that gets this thing done.
All of these wide receivers around the league getting paid at this exact moment probably aren't helping either, or at least helping the 49ers. Do you have, again, camp 6 days away, are you entering this season with expectations, high expectations for this football team?
Kind of. I mean, look at their schedule. Like, this is kind of the perfect storm for a bounce back, right? Like, you have... I mean, I don't think the Super Bowl hangover is a thing from the sense of like, oh, they lost a Super Bowl, so that means they're not. But they're not going to contend next year. But I think it's a thing in that, like, it's a thing to have an offseason that's 6 weeks shorter, particularly when you have a veteran team. And the Niners have a veteran team. They have one of the oldest rosters in the league. And they get those 6 weeks added to their offseason where they're not, you know, putting the physical toll on their body to get ready for a playoff game or even playing playoff games or the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to benefit from that rest, that extra rest that they needed. And also, like, they're playing the AFC South, the NFC South. They got a last place schedule. Like, they are, I know there's been a lot of turnover at the roster. I've been arguing all offseason with, not with Kyle, but Kyle and I think are in agreement that, like, the Niners haven't lost anyone super important. Like, Debo, the 2021 Debo Samuel is a 2021, like, he's not going to be the same player in 2025. Mm-hmm. Like, you can argue, like, okay, if Dre Greenlaw bounces back from injury and he's really good, maybe that's a substantial loss. I think Talanoa Hufanga was pretty replaceable. I think the guys they lost in the defensive line are basically replacement level starters. I don't view this as like, oh, they lost all of their good players and now they don't have a chance. Like, the NFC West, I think, is very even, and it's going to be a tough division, but I could see the 49ers winning it. But just the fact that they have the AFC South and the NFC South on their schedule makes me think, like, expectations should be pretty high given how much equity the Niners have built up. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if they have, you know, 10 or 11 wins when it's all said and done.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.